the visions of faith, and text number 7. So Arjuna asked the question that began the chapter about those people that have given up the Shastra, Yashastrim Vidin Utsrija Yajante Shadayanvita, but they worship with faith. So Tesham Nishta Tika Krishna, what is their position? Are they in Sattva, Rajas or Tamas? And Krishna said, Chi Bhavati, Chibida Bhavati Shraddha. There's three kinds of Shraddha. And that's according to their Svabhavaja, according to their birth or their modes of nature that they have acquired since birth. And that is Sattvana Rupa Chetasam. Comes from their Sattva, their existence in their consciousness. Sattvana Rupa Sarvasya Shraddha Bhavati Bharata. And we described how those modes that are in the heart reflect in the mind and in the heart and create the sattva, the existence of the person, which creates his faith. And then once the faith is there in a particular mode, although it's supposed to be in goodness, but because we're in the material world, it's mixed, then it manifests in different ways and there's different kinds of worship. Those who are mainly in goodness worship demigods, those who are mainly in passion worship human beings and rakshasas and like this. And those who are in ignorance, they worship ghosts and so forth. But if someone's not doing any worship, how can you tell what mode of nature they're in? Suppose they're not religious. Well, then you can tell by the kind of food they eat. So now Krishna talks about the type of food that one likes under particular modes of nature. Because the kind of food that you like indicates which mode of nature you're under. Right? Text number 7. Aharastvapi sarvasya trividho bhavati priyaha jagyastapas tatha danam tesham bhedam imam shinu. Even the food each person prefers is of three kinds according to the three modes of nature. This is the same is true of sacrifices, austerity, and charity. Now hear the distinction between them. So if someone's not doing worship, you can tell by the food they eat, the sacrifices they perform, the austerities or the charity they perform, because they're all in under the different modes of nature. So now we begin with food.
Ayusatva balarogya sukha priti vivardhanaha rasya snigdha stira hridya avhara sattvika priyaha.
Foods dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life, purify one's existence, and give strength, health, happiness, and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart.
Sukha priti vivardhana. They increase the pleasure
or happiness.
Sukha priti vivardhanaha.
And they're rasya, juicy. They're not dry. Like some foods, like if you go on the trains in India, they serve this this dal, which is fried and has spices. Right? It's not in the mode of goodness. Although it may satisfy your hunger. But it's very dry. It's not juicy. So it's not in... Foods should be... juicy, rasya, like gur. Although gur is also dry, but it has some juice there. You can ask questions afterwards, right?
Dha means fatty, but doesn't mean animal fat. Good God, no. It means ghee.
Means that it has lots of ghee. Of course, not tons of ghee, but can be. When it's fatty, it's made with ghee.
Stira,
it's enduring. And hridya, it's healthy for the heart, good for the heart. ahara, food, sattvika, priya. So these are the adjectives for these types of food. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the word pavitram should be added to this list. Krishna forgot to say pavitram. It means pure. Acharyas can get away with these things, you know. In other words, the food should be prepared by a pure person in a pure place with pure ingredients, and it should be served by a pure person, and it should be taken in a pure place. You know, like this. So all of these adjectives, pavitram should be added here, because otherwise it's not in goodness. If it's sattvic food, you know, like whatever, any nice sattvic food, and it's, you know, it's prepared in a dirty place by a dirty person, and it's served by a dirty person, and you're sitting in a dirty place and it's noisy, and it's not going to be in the mind of goodness. So it has to be pure. It should be also pleasing to the eyes. You know, when you see like a fresh salad, it looks kind of buoyant and springy, and there's still some, you know, water on the leaves of the lettuce and the tomatoes and so forth. But when this salad is, you know, a few hours old, or maybe from the morning and you're eating it in the evening, and it looks kind of brownish, you know. Or a banana when you let it sit around half of the day, and or an apple, right? Of course, in India, when it's hot, it gets... becomes like that after a few hours, 2 or 3 hours, if you leave a cut apple out, and it becomes brown and kind of, you look at it, it doesn't look very nice, it doesn't attract you. So that it means it's losing its sattvic quality. These kind of foods are generally made from cow products, ghee, milk, yogurt, and butter, like that. That's why the cow is very important for human civilization, and especially religious life, because people, in order to get people to come to the mode of goodness, it's required that they should have animal fat. Good God, no. It means ghee. It means that it has lots of ghee. Of course, not tons of ghee, but can be. When it's fatty, it's made with ghee. Stira, it's enduring. And hridya, it's healthy for the heart, good for the heart. Ahara, food, sattvika, priya. So these are the adjectives for these types of food. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the word pavitram should be added to this list. Krishna forgot to say pavitram. It means pure. Acharyas can get away with these things, you know. In other words, the food should be prepared by a pure person in a pure place with pure ingredients, and it should be served by a pure person, and it should be taken in a pure place, you know, like this. So all of these adjectives, pavitram should be added here, because otherwise it's not in goodness. If it's sattvic food, you know, like whatever, any nice sattvic food, and it's, you know, it's prepared in a dirty place by a dirty person, and it's served by a dirty person, and you're sitting in a dirty place and it's noisy, and it's not going to be in the mind of goodness. So it has to be pure. It should be also pleasing to the eyes. You know, when you see like a fresh salad, it looks kind of buoyant and springy, and there's still some, you know, water on the leaves of the lettuce and the tomatoes and so forth. But when this salad is, you know, a few hours old, or maybe from the morning and you're eating it in the evening, and it looks kind of brownish, you know. Or a banana when you let it sit around half of the day, and or an apple, right? Of course, in India, when it's hot, it gets... becomes like that after a few hours, 2 or 3 hours, if you leave a cut apple out, and it becomes brown and kind of, you look at it, it doesn't look very nice. It doesn't attract you. So that it means it's losing its sattvic quality. These kind of foods are generally made from cow products, ghee, milk, yogurt, like butter, like that. That's why the cow is very important for human civilization, and especially religious life, because people, in order to get people to come to the mode of goodness, it's required that they should have some milk products. It's helpful. It increases one's enthusiasm. But even these foods should be eaten in moderation. Someone who's in goodness, he won't, you know, stuff himself with anything, take too much of anything, even if it's milk or ghee or, you know, grains, nice grains cooked. They should also be eaten in moderation. And if all of these foods are not offered to the Lord, then they should be abandoned by the Vaishnavas. So even foods and goodness, they must be offered to the Lord. Okay. Next. Now, foods enjoyed by rajasic people. Katvamla labanat yushna tikshna ruksha vidhahina ahara rajasa syeshta dhuka shokamaya pradaha. Foods that are too bitter, too salty, too sour, salty, hot, pungent, dry, and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such foods cause distress, misery, and disease. So the word ati, found in the first pada of this shloka, is a qualifier which is meant for all of the words in the verse. In other words, too bitter, too sour, too salty, too hot, too pungent, too dry and burning, too much burning. This word ati is meant to be used for all of the nouns or the all of the adjectives. Lavanati. Ati. Ati means too much. It's the superlative prefix in Sanskrit. Katu. Bitter. Like you have corella, neem leaves, or you have in the West wormwood. Wormwood is a kind of spice or a herb that you can find anywhere really, especially in Russia they have it. I forgot the Russian word for it, I'm sorry. I can't remember. Do you know? Any herbologists from Russia here? Wormwood. Huh? No. I think I was asking. Pawi? No, that's close. I think I was asking for it when I was in Perm. You remember?
Yeah, I know.
Pauline. Yeah, that's why I can't remember the word. Pauline. Very bitter. If you eat Pauline, even a half a teaspoon with any sabji, anything, then when you eat some fried corella, it will taste sweet. This is how bitter it is. Okay? Now you can get an idea. And it destroys all of the, you know, bad amoebas in your digestive tract. It's very good for cleaning out, because it's so bitter, they just... Ah! All the little amoebas in your stomach are finished. But if you eat too much bitter, then it's not good, and that's rajasic. Generally, we don't have that problem. Amla means sour. Actually, the fruit amla is called amla also. If you eat it, it's so sour. It's incredibly sour. It's also lavana, salty, and ushna means temperature hot, and tikshna means chili hot or spicy hot. So the food can't be too physically hot, and too much spices is no good. As you know, in parts of India and in parts of, well, I guess Mauritius and South Africa, there are some members of our congregation who put, you know, tons of chili in their food. And afterwards, you know, you can feel this burning sensation in your mouth and tongue, right? And usually it makes you hiccup also. It shows that the body is, you know, rebelling against this. And if it's burning the mouth, it actually even burns, if you touch a chili, right, it can burn on your skin the whole night and keep you awake, especially if you rub your eyes. You know, you're cooking in the kitchen, right? Have you ever done that? Right? You're cutting up chilies and then you kind of scratch your eye. The whole afternoon you're crying, right? So what to speak of when it gets into your stomach, right? Your stomach is very sensitive tissue, right? So if it's burning even your mouth and in your hands, what to speak when it gets into your stomach? It causes havoc. So it's not good. But you can put a little bit of chili in something. But ati means too much. Ruksha means again dry, like this fried chana dal that they serve on the trains. It's also passionate. Generally fried potatoes also, like chips with like tomato ketchup on it. This is also rajasic food. Hare Krishna. Confirmed by the microphone. Can you turn it down a little bit? And the microphone's too high, it's also in the mode of passion. See, the kind of food, when you start eating it and you feel that you cannot stop, that means it's in the mode of passion. Right? When your senses become so enlivened and addicted to the taste, like when you're eating chips, right? Huh? It's like then you feel like ordering another plate and another plate and another plate. Huh? This means you're in the mode of passion. Vidahina. Now there's no difficult to adjust this, huh? Anyway. Vidahina means burning. So now here's the interesting thing. I forgot to say. Tiksha means like radish or chili, particularly, we'd say. Ruksha, dry, means like asvatida. Did you ever have a sabji with too much asvatida in it? Any time in your life? You know what the feeling is like after you finish eating it? It's like, you have this very strange, it's like your whole mouth is dry. It just sucks out all of the moisture. It's a very horrible feeling. That's what happens when the cook knocks over the asvatida, you know, thing into the sabji. You say, oops. That happens. The fried chana also creates a burning sensation. And it's too dry. And Krishna says, dukkha shoka maya prada. You know this word prada, you know, it gives, right? So it gives dukkha when you're eating it. This is a progression. Dukkha, when you're eating it. Then shoka, after you eat it, you lament. Oh my God, what did I do? And then further on, amaya, it causes disease in that order. First there's distress while you're eating it. Then you lament afterwards, after you eat it. And then after some hours or the next day, you get sick. It's in that order. So. Okay, text 10. Yatayaman gata rasam putti pariushitam chayat uchishtam apicha medyam bhojanam tamasa priyam.
Food prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten, food that is tasteless, decomposed, and putrid, and food consisting of remnants and untouchable things is dear to those in the mode of darkness.
So the word yata yaman, all of the acharyas say the same thing, that it's when food is prepared for more than 3 hours before it's being taken.
It also means that it's not cooked properly, or it's overcooked or burnt.
Has other meanings to this word, yata yaman.
And so when you prepare something and then it sits around, you know, the whole afternoon, that's what happens. And it starts to decompose. Like I was talking about, like salads and fruit and things like this, sabjis. This is what happens. The first thing you notice is gata rasam, that there's no juice left. The whatever it is becomes dry, like a sabji. When it's fresh and it looks nice and it's juicy. But then late in the afternoon, you look at a nice potato sabji and it just, right? It looks all dried up and it's starting to decompose. Gata rasam, there's no juice there. And then puti, bad smell. Right? Has a bad smell, starts to stink. Paryushitam, it's because it's decomposing. So this is what happens when you wait too long. If you prepare it too much before it's being eaten, in other words, the food should be fresh. It should be cooked, offered, and then eaten right away. The sooner the better. And that's what you see. People in India, that's what they do. They don't have leftovers in India, right? There's no such thing as leftovers. They cook, and everybody, they distribute to everyone, and there's something left, they give it to the animals, and the next meal, they cook fresh everything again. So Prabhupada said, you know, eating any grains which is not hot is useless, like rice. And all of these foods are meant to be served. If you go to a restaurant, they give you hot chapatis to one, and then another, after 5 minutes, another, and this. That's how it's meant to be eaten also. Then uchishtam means remnants. Remnants of someone else means tamagun. Now you'll say, wait a minute. Everything we eat is remnants. It means we're all in tamagun? No. Because food which is offered to the Lord, the deity form of the Lord, or the spiritual master, is not considered in the mode of ignorance. And those kind of remnants can be and should be taken. But here it's talking about except the guru and the deity. Because all prasadam, let's get it straight, all prasadam is above the modes of nature. Categorically, absolutely. It's absolute food. It's food above the modes of nature. So even if prasadam drops from the mouth of a hog onto the street, still it's considered pure. But it depends upon your faith. Of course, you know, the other bits of dirt and debris that may enter onto the food, that may not be pure, and you may get sick. We're not recommending that you scrape food off of the ground. But we know Raghunath Das did this, right? He could understand this food is pure. Even the cows wouldn't eat it, the old rotten rice, you know. And he ate it. He can understand, because his faith was such. Or Prahlad, he was actually taking poison from his own father. But because he understood that this is the Lord's mercy, and then he offered it to the Lord, and then he took it, and there was no effect. Like this. So, if you have that kind of faith, you can eat anything. So you have to approach prasadam according to your level of advancement, according to your faith.
But still, as I said, the prasadam, you know, the saliva of the pig may not be pure. That the prasadam itself may be pure. The prasadam is never contaminated, actually. Anyway. And then almedyam means fish, meat, and eggs, and other untouchable things like caviar, darling. You know what caviar is? Fish eggs. Caviar. And venison, deer meat, or lobster, or any other such delicious foods. Other, what do they say? Delicacies. Like, in we already discussed, in the East, the delicacies are like sparrows and lizards and turtles and frogs. They eat all these things. And, you know, the freshly killed Kripamoya Prabhu, the congregational minister in England, told us a story when he was in Africa, and he went to, you know, he was preaching it to different people, going to big people, selling sets of books and making life memories. And he went to one gentleman, I think it was the mayor of the town, I don't know where it was, somewhere in South Africa. And he was preaching to him, came into his big office, the man was behind a big desk and pictures and everything, nice big office. He was the mayor of the town, he's sitting in the front, you know, explaining the philosophy to him. And, you know, in Africa sometimes they have these big flying dates, these big bugs that fly around, like big cockroaches, they're everywhere. So this, as he was preaching to the man was like, you know, looking at this thing flying around. And then suddenly he just grabbed it. And the devotee just went. So this is another such amedhyam, untouchable item. But bhojanam tamasa priyam, they're very dear to those who are in the mode of ignorance. And Prabhupada went to Korea, I think it was. Was it Korea or Japan? Anyway, he went to one of these countries. I think it was Korea. You know, that I already told you that they had a pot in the hallway where they kept, you know, the remnants of creatures, you know, dogs and cats and everything, and they would just drop them into this jug. And then they, you know, just ferment for months and months, and we start to bubble and stink. And then there's a little tap on the bottom, and people would come and fill up their cup and drink it. Hare Krishna. That's what happened when Prabhupada, they were cooking in that, oh, that was in Tokyo. They were cooking, right? And the landlady came up and she was saying, you have to stop this. You know, they were making a masala and the chants was going all around the building, and they thought that was a horrible smell. They couldn't stand it, you know. Same, must be the same. They had the same experience, it must have been. So they hated the smell of the masala, but they drink this. It just makes you shiver just to think of it, right? Balade Vidyabhushan says, those in goodness offer their obeisances to these foods from very far away. Okay, so there you have it. There's the different kinds of foods. Now, another category, sacrifices. There's also three kinds of sacrifices, according to the three modes. Aphalakangshibhiryagyo vididishto yajate yashtavya mevete mana samadhaya sasatvikaha. Of sacrifices, the sacrifice performed according to the directions of scripture as a matter of duty by those who desire no reward is of the nature of goodness. Prabhupada comments. The general tendency is to offer sacrifice with some purpose in mind. But here is stated the sacrifice should be formed without any such desire. It should be done as a matter of duty. Take, for example, the performance of rituals in temples or in churches. Generally, they are performed with the purpose of material benefit, but that is not in the mode of goodness. One should go to a temple or church as a matter of duty, offer respect to the Lord, offer flowers and eatables. Everyone thinks that there is no use in going to the temple just to worship God. But worship for economic benefit is not recommended. One should go simply to offer respect to the deity. That will place one in the mode of goodness. Next text.
Abhisandhayatu phalam dambhartam abhichayvayat ijate bharata shreshta tam yagyam hidiranyasam.
But the sacrifice performed for some material benefit or for the sake of pride, O chief of the Bharatas, you should know to be the mode of passion. So, abhisandhaya tu phalam, desiring the fruit, that's rajasic yajna. But even worse is dambhartam, when you do it for the sake of pride. That's considered worse. Still in passion, but it's a degree lower. Okay, well that's pretty clear. Now, for the tamasic yajna.
Vidihinam ashrishtanam mantrahinam adakshinam shraddha virahitam yajnam tamasam parichakshate.
So here you have five things that make it in the mode of ignorance. First one is vidihinam, without any shastra or rules from the scriptures. Ashrishtanam, without any distribution of prasadam. Mantrahinam, no mantras. Adakshinam, no remunerations for the priests. And last and most important is shraddha virahitam, without any faith. Actually, the acharyas say that the first and the last thing are the most important. The vidhi, the rules of the scripture, and the faith. And then the mantras and the remuneration and the prasadam is in between. Those things are also important, but not as important as the first and last item. So that's, Prabhupada said, if we go to do a program, we should distribute prasadam and chant the holy name and distribute books, which is the scriptures. Okay, Prabhupada comments. Faith in the mode of darkness is actually faithlessness. Some people worship some demigod just to make money and then spend the money for recreation, ignoring the scriptural injunctions. Such ceremonial shows of religiosity are not accepted as genuine. They are all in the mode of darkness, and they produce a demoniac mentality and do not benefit human society. Okay. Next thing is austerity. According to the body, mind, and speech. Or body, speech, and mind, in that order. And then there's a description of the three modes. But first there's a description of the three kinds of austerity. Okay, text 14.
Devadvija guru pragya pujanam shaucham arjavam brahmacharya mahingsa cha shariram tapa uchate.
Austerity of the body consists of worship of the Supreme Lord, the Brahmanas, the spiritual master, and superiors like father and mother, and in cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and non-violence. So these are the most simplest austerities and the most prominent or traditional ones. Deva, the Lord, Dvija, Brahman, the Guru, and Pragya means the superiors, the elders of the village, the mother and father. Actually, unfortunately, somehow or other, it seems that in our movement we've neglected some of these things. Although we stress Guru very much. Everybody knows they have to worship the guru, but they forget about the Brahmins, the elders, the women, you know, the cows, right? All of these living entities should be respected. So respect was given in such a way that it was like all-pervading. It wasn't just the guru, because nowadays I see, and I think a lot of people have commented, that, you know, like Guru Maharaj is everything and everyone else can go to hell. So this kind of mentality is not very good. It shows a Kanishta, a crippled Kanishta mentality. And it creates a lot of problems. And a lot of people have thus been hurt, abused, insulted, etc., etc., and probably a lot of you who are sitting here with us. So we have to change that. The guru should definitely be respected, yes, but not just him. Right? We have to learn how to be respectful to all living entities. So we should begin with the brahmanas, the cows, women, and the elders, like this. It's part of Vaishnava etiquette. There's different considerations. One is the age of the person, the other is his varna and ashram, his position of responsibility in the Vaishnava community, his diksha, that's the most important thing. Well, actually more important than even the diksha is his spiritual advancement. But that is sometimes not so easy to judge. So we put stress on the diksha, when the person takes diksha. But the other things are also to be considered. So if someone is elderly, then we have to be respectful to them, even if they're not initiated. If they're chanting the holy name, they're to be respected. And then what to speak if they're, you know, sannyasi or... Well, sannyasis generally we understand. But all of these things have to be taken into consideration. Now the other things are like cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and non-violence. So these are also there, things that we do with the body. Okay, next. Text. Anudvega karam bhakyam satyam priyahitam chayat swanyaya bhyasanam chayeva vanmayam tapa uchate. Austerity of speech consists of speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, and beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. So, words should be truthful, satya priyam, and they should be pleasing to the ear. Anuvegam karam vakyam. They shouldn't be agitating. They should be beneficial for the person. Hitam. Satyam priya hitam. Chayat. In other words, one should speak the truth, but not the bitter truth. It shouldn't be so agitating to the person. It should be truthful, but it should be spoken in pleasing words. In other words, as much as possible, make it digestible to the audience or to the person that you're speaking to. In other words, instead of just saying like, if you don't give up this sinful activity of eating meat, then you're just like a dog. You can say it in a different way, right? You can say that animals also tear apart each other's flesh and eat it. Or you can say, one who eats meat is comparable to an animal. But if you say, you know, you're like a dog, it's too direct and, you know, insulting to the person. So that's just a simple example. And of course, reciting the Vedas, regularly. This is an austerity of speech. Right. Now, austerity of the mind is the most difficult one.
Mana prasara samyatvam maunamatma venigraha bhava samshuddhi etyetat tapo mana samuchate.
Satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. So the first one, mana prasara, this is the primary quality. To make the mind satisfied, one has to detach it from sense gratification. So we have to train the mind to be very grave and controlled and not think of sense gratification. Then it can be, only can, then can it be satisfied. Mana prasada samyadvam. And Prabhupada says the best training for the mind's gravity and thought, one should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. We think that we'll become satisfied by allowing the mind to run to sense objects, but it doesn't work like that. We become more frustrated. And actually, it just takes a few hundred thousand, you know, experiences. And gradually, you start to realize that what Krishna is saying is true. Because if we could just learn it after once, we would be very fortunate. But somehow, we allow our minds to run to sense enjoyment again and again. And then we feel dissatisfied. And then we think, oh, I'll never do that again. And then when it comes again, we allow it to do. So, I guess from hearing it again and again, gradually, you know, you'll get some realization, and then you'll really control. We all control our minds. It's not so easy thing. So mana prasada, samyadvam, simplicity, being pleased. Samya means like the moon, also like being pleasing, not duplicitous, not crooked. Maunam, gravity, not unnecessarily speaking something. Atma vinigram, self-control. Bhava samshuddhi, pure self-purification. Prabhupada says the best course is to read the Puranas, Mahabharata, and the other Vedic literature. This is what they're for. Samyatvam also means not being cruel and always desiring the happiness for others. Atma vinigraha also means just controlling the mind from sense gratification. And bhava samshuddhi also means being free from duplicity. According to Balani Vidyabhushan. Text 17.
Shadaya paraya taptam tapastachi vidam narai apala kangshi bhir yuktai satvikam parichakshate.
This threefold austerity, performed with transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme, is called austerity and goodness. So again, apala kangshi bhi. You'll notice this is one of the words which is mentioned when goodness is being described. Without any desire for the fruits, but rather out of duty, just for the sake of the Supreme, and with faith. So paraya means for the Supreme. Now, austerity in passion, in text 18.
Satkara mana pujartam tapodampena chaivayat kriyate tariha proptam rajasam chalamadruvam.
Penance performed out of pride and for the sake of gaining respect, honor, and worship is said to be in the mode of passion. It is neither stable nor permanent. So satkara means respect. Particularly to get respect or worship by speech. Someone says, oh, he's a great sadhu. He's a great sadhu. Sadkar. And then mana means honor. And puja means particularly being honored with the body. In other words, someone like you come into a great assembly and then everyone stands to honor you. This is called puja. Tapo dhamba. Now I think you remember this word dhamba, right? From chapter 16. It means ostentatious. With pride. So somebody's performing an austerity just so that people will honor him, worship him, say that he's great. This is in the mode of passion. And it is chalam adruvam. It's temporary and flickering. There's no real lasting permanent benefit from austerity done with this motivation in the mode of passion. You get some temporary result, which is flickering. You become a celebrity for a few years, something like this. But to come to spiritual knowledge, then one has to perform these austerities in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada says the same things here in his comments. Sometimes penance and austerity are executed to attract people and receive honor, respect, and worship from others. Persons in the mode of passion arrange to be worshipped by subordinates and let them wash their feet and offer riches. Such arrangements artificially made by the performance of penances are considered to be in the mode of passion. The results are temporary. They can be continued for some time, but they are not permanent. So you can see how dangerous it is to be a spiritual master, right? Because if you have the desire, if you're not free from that desire for the honor and worship, and you, in other words, you're performing your spiritual activities just so that other people will wash your feet and offer you riches, which is what happens when you worship the guru, especially at the Vyasa Puja ceremony, then it can be dangerous unless the person's actually detached and is accepting it on behalf of the Supreme Lord. It's not so easy to do that, because even the person may have that intention initially, but he may gradually be affected by the mode of passion and then have some difficulty. That's why it's not a joke. It's not easy to do that, to actually take that type of worship. That's why those spiritual masters who are not on the topmost platform, they have to be very careful. They have to be very cautious about accepting this. For the disciples, it's wonderful. They make spiritual advancement. The guru has to be able to accept that. Now, text 19, austerity in the mode of ignorance being described. Mudha grahinatmano yad pidaya griyate tapaha parasyotsadanartam vatatama samudaritam. Penance performed out of foolishness with self-torture or to destroy or injure others is said to be in the mode of ignorance. This particularly has to do with the first austerity of the body. And we see Hiranyakashipu is the prime example given by Prabhupada. Okay. So, now charity will be the last thing we discuss today. Then we'll stop for a moment. Well, I have some lectures. Prabhupada has something to say about giving charity. We'll just listen to that when we get to this section.
Dātavyamiti yadānam diyate nubakārine Deshe kale cha patre cha tadhanam satvikam smritam.
Charity given out of duty, without expectation of return, at the proper time and place, and to a worthy person is considered to be in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada comments that charity is recommended to be given at a place of pilgrimage and at a lunar or solar eclipse or at the end of the month or to a qualified Brahmin or Vaishnava or in temples. Today is the end of the month. It's the Purnima. Right?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow? So you can give charity tomorrow. Find some pure Vaishnava, Brahmin. Or go to some temple. Or just surrender everything to Krishna Balaram. Can offer your heart and soul. Text 21.
Yatu pratyupakaratam phalam udishya vapunaha niyate cha pariklishtam tadhamam rajasam smritam.
But charity performed with the expectation of some return, or with desire for fruitive results, or in a grudging mood, is said to be charity in the mode of passion. So here that's this one that we discussed before. And again, the word phalam udishya, desiring the fruit, is mentioned. So this is always the symptom of passion, when people desire to enjoy the fruit of their activity. And Prabhupada comments that charity is sometimes performed for elevation to the heavenly kingdom, and sometimes with great trouble and with repentance afterwards. Why have I spent so much in this way? Charity is also sometimes given under some obligation at the request of a superior. These kinds of charity are in the mode of passion. 22.
Adesha kale yadanam apatre bhyascha diyate asatkritam avagyatam tattama samudaritam.
And charity performed at an impure place at an improper time to unworthy persons or without proper attention and respect is said to be in the mode of ignorance. So, the holy place is the best place for giving charity. And people who are the proper patras, or the worthy persons, are people who have, or actually very sick, or they have limbs missing, and particularly if they're sitting down, you know, humbly waiting for donations. Prabhupada said if people chase after you and harass you for donations, then don't give them anything. But if they're sitting down humbly and they just say Rade Rade or Haribol, well, then you can give them something. You know? It means they're bona fide beggars. Of course, and you know, you can give them a donation of money even in general, especially in the holy place. There are not so many people who, you know, are taking drugs and alcohol and so forth. So generally, they just, you know, buy some sabjis and go home and cook them, you know. Of course, you can never really tell. I mean, there was once a guy that came up to us in Loy Bazaar and he was drunk. I just told him to get lost. And sometimes, but, you know, that's kind of rare. Usually, just simple Brijabasis. And they're good. It's good to give them charity. Once in Puri, Saraswati Thakur, he chastised his disciples in a kind of mock way, in a sarcastic way. Kind of revealing their mentality. He said, "Oh, I wouldn't give to those people. They're in the modes of nature, and they're karmis. And I'll be influenced by their karma. I don't want to take their karma." Ugh. You know, like this. He was talking, you know, revealing their mentality. He understood that's how they were thinking. But actually, he was telling them, don't be so cheap. You know, give donations if you can afford to give to these people because they're very poor. And though the famous Jayananda, he used to come from America and, you know, have plans to buy all kinds of things, and, you know, and he saw these people begging and he felt so sorry for them. Of course, now, in the 70s, it was a little different. Now it's become a bit of a commercial thing because we've got a big temple, they're all lined up, and, right? There's like professional beggars. But in the old days, it was a little different, you know. I guess they were more sincere or whatever, but anyway, Jayananda was touched by them and he just gave them all his money. And he came back with no dhotis and nothing for himself. Because he felt that, how can I walk past these people and not give them anything? I should give them something. And another understanding of a patra, who's the proper recipient, if you're giving medicine, food, or clothing, then anyone who is willing to accept it is a proper recipient. Then you don't have to judge so much, you know. If you want to give charity, food, medicine, or clothes, then you don't have to be so strict. But if you're giving money, then you have to be a little bit more discriminatory. You have to use your discrimination more. Yeah. Okay. Now, since we got to charity, we can hear.
To a Brahmana, then it is proper Brahmana. I mean, it's a qualified Brahmana, Vaishnava. Then your charity is properly utilized. And if you give the same charity to a drunkard, then you commit sinful act. If you do not know what kind of charities we shall perform, if you blindly give charity, then sometimes you may be doing pious activities, but sometimes you are clearing the way for going to hell. Therefore in the Bhagavad Gita it is stated there are three kinds of charity: sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. If you perform sattvic charity, then you get good result. Rajasic charity, you get some profit. And tamasic charity, you go to hell.
Then Prabhupada tells some stories about his neighbor. Once was one of the young lady was beating her child, and he had his servant, probably sent his servant across, find out why she's doing this. So the servant went there and talked to them, and he came back and he said that the older brother of that boy had some disease, typhoid. And he couldn't eat any fried or solid food. But he told, you know, that he told his brother, "I'm very hungry. Please, you get me some paratha." You know, so then the boy felt sorry for his older brother, and he came and he gave him some paratha. So then when the mother found out, "What, you gave paratha to him? But he has typhoid," and she beat him like anything, screaming, "Ah, little boy!" So the boy was, you know, he had a good motive, and he, out of compassion, out of the goodness of his heart, he was giving in charity, but it was in the wrong circumstance, and he got the bad result. And he tells a few other stories like that in this tape. Very nice. Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 47, entitled, Krishna Wants to Be... Oh, I'm sorry, this is the wrong... Yeah, 1847. Material affection has no meaning. Given in Mayapur, 1974. On the 27th of October. I mean, you can eat different things if it's like an emergency, like, you know, maybe bread or some kind of grains, if you have to. Prabhupada said that if it is an emergency, if you really have to. But generally said that you should avoid those things. And you just eat, you know, fresh things like yogurt, nuts, fruits, fresh vegetables, things that you can eat raw, like that, things that are not cooked by the non-devotees. Those are the best things. So voila, on the train platform. And Prabhupada said, you know, the devotees questioned, but is this okay to buy this? Prabhupada said, yes, if you pay for it, then it's not, there, you know, there's a, the karma's not transmitted. And plus, and he said further that if you stand there and watch him cook it, you know, fry it fresh, then, and you're watching, then he says you can digest it and it'll be no problem. No matter what they fry it in. Because they, you know, they use it, the oil over and over again, and it's not so clean. But he said if you watch them cook it and then you pay for it, then it's okay. You can do that. Because, you know, when you're traveling, also there's some difficulty in getting, you know, proper food. Because this is in India, it's a little different. Like in the Dham, you can go, it's understood that everything's offered. So, yeah. So we can eat anything. It's transcendental. But, for real. But still, you have to control your senses because you'll still get the same belly ache and diarrhea and whatever else that you'll get from eating foods which are...
So if you buy like a papaya or something, you don't have to offer it to the
human? No, no, you can offer it, but it's... I mean, it's like acceptable. All of the foods acceptable. It's considered, you know, dham prasad, something like that. Do I have a reference?
Yes.
I'd have to find it. I've heard many of my godbrothers tell me that Prabhupada said this. So, because it's coming from so many people, it must have been said. That's true always. That's part of our philosophy. Yeah. Prabhupada said that there has to be a little salt in the sabji, right? Otherwise it doesn't have a good taste. Depends on the person's advancement as ashram. A sannyasi doesn't need as much salt as a grihastha, right? So there's, you know, different strokes for different ashrams. And, you know, he's... Yeah, it's true. Why are you laughing? Stop laughing. What was I going to say now? Good God. You'll find a shloka. It's in the 11th canto somewhere. And describes sense control. And the example, the Bhagavatam shloka itself says like or someone riding a horse. So when you're riding a horse, if you pull too much on the reins restrictively, then the horse will buck and throw you off. And if you just let loose of the reins, then the horse will ride, you know, the horse will think, oh, this guy is a sucker, you know, and he'll, you know, go here and there and he'll just go wild, and like this. So it has to be somewhere in between. You have to, the horse has to know that you're in control, but you can't pull in too much, otherwise he can't handle that. You take away his power to run. So each individual has to understand himself, and he has to judge his own ability, how much he can restrain from sense gratification, and try to minimize the gratification of the senses to the lowest degree, but not too much so that he, you know, jumps out the window, something like this. So that's part of our philosophy. It's not a new thing. Everybody has to adjust themselves, but it's just a matter of being balanced. And that's the hard thing, is to find someone who's balanced. Because people in a mode of passion, they swing over to this side, and then they swing way over on this side. And then, you know, it's called the ISKCON pendulum, you know. But to find someone who's balanced and has understanding how to be mature and balanced on that, it's rather difficult. So that's why we have to, we should ourselves learn that. If we know the philosophy, then we can see when someone's being fanatical or extreme. Right? It'll be very obvious. Doesn't mean it means to give honor. Manasa means the mind. It means that it's dry, it's juiceless, and the taste is leaving because it's decomposing, and that's what it means. Gata rasa means the without rasa, which means taste, juice,
flavor.
The flavors, well, when you leave something for around for half a day, it starts to lose its flavor, right? Well, it's true. He did approach it in a passionate way. He wanted a big kingdom and everything. So, but Narada was very merciful to him because he was a little boy, right? He felt sorry for him or whatever. And because Narada is such a great Vaishnava, he was able to give him such mercy that Lord Vishnu came personally, and he attained Bhava Bhakti in 6 months. Because his austerity was very intense. So he wasn't, although he was tinged with, you know, Rajagun, still he was a great soul. And then he became a pure devotee by Narada's mercy and by the contact with the Lord. So you have a transcendental element thrown into the, it's not just simply someone in the mode of passion. Because all of us are in the modes of nature, but when we meet a pure devotee, like all of, you know, then we get the people that were coming to Tompkins Square Park and seeing Prabhupada, they were also in the modes of nature. But then they were delivered to Krishna.
Also, what about...
probably in that same category.
Like
you're sticking a needle in your arm and again and again and again. Some sampradayas, they do tattooing. No, no, they don't do tattoos. That's a different thing. And they do it really quick. It just singes the skin lightly. And now they don't even do that, as far as I've heard. But they don't do a tattoo thing with needles and... They don't do that.